No better person to be on the show right now than our next guest. Sean Merriman joins us, former Charger, CEO of LightsOutBrand.com. Sean, how are you doing today, brother?
Hey, what's up, my man? How's it going?
We're going well. Chargers, big victory last night. It seems as though, you know, most of us out here being San Diegans haven't seen them perform like this in quite some time. What was your take watching the game last night, Sean?
You know, they started a lot slower than expected. You know, obviously with them losing the first game to Kansas City at home and now going to get a big victory there. You know, it's that time of the year. You know, look at Phillips and the team and how they performed in December. You know, they're hitting that streak right now, and it's the perfect time because now the playoffs coming there. You get a chance to get Melvin Gordon back healthy and some of the other guys. Keenan Allen should be healthy going into the playoffs. So, they got the hot hand right now. They're a scary team to play.
Sean, what does Los Angeles think about the Chargers at this point? I mean, it seems like they've been kind of the poor stepchild up there. Obviously, the Rams are having a great season, but I would think this victory's got to grab some people's attention in the L.A. area. I mean, we're getting calls down here now in San Diego from people that are flat out not ashamed to admit that they're still big-time Charger fans. We weren't hearing that a month ago.
Yeah, you know the statement how it goes, right? Winning cures all. You go out winning games and people who are in the gray area or on the fence and not on the fence anymore. But that's what it's going to take. You know, when they made the big move and started out 0-4 last year, they had a lot of people who was on the fence just jumping completely off. So as long as they go out and just keep winning games and get on this national stage, you know, I got my show up there where I shoot on Coast to Coast on ESPN, and finally, you know, Phillip Rivers has talked about as an MVP candidate when I was kind of screaming his out for the past 6 weeks. But it takes a big victory against Kansas City in order for him to get that notoriety.
Sean Merriman joins Gwen and Chris here on 97.3 The Fan, former Charger. Sean, you've played with Phillip Rivers. You know how competitive he is. In your opinion, is this one of his best seasons in his career?
It is, and not just because what year it is for him. I mean, he's getting up there, but he's not performing like it. More importantly, he has some talent around him, and he's able to use all of them. You know, Melvin Gordon goes down, and Eckler gets in there and find a way to get him involved. Mike Williams was hurt last year, couldn't really stay on the field. He's coming back from that injury that he had. He's finding a way to use him now. So, you know, in his year, I think his 16th year, he's finding ways to utilize the talent around him, and that's, to me, is the most impressive.
Sean Merriman, a great Charger with the team from 2005 through 2010, and now the CEO of LightsOutBrand.com. We remember that Lights Out dance. Yeah, he did it 17 times in 2006, and that was a great year, of course, for the Chargers, 14-2 season. But, Sean, that was 10 years ago, and they've changed a lot of the rules now for defensive players. Do you think it would affect your game at all the way they're doing things these days in the NFL? Nobody can touch anybody.
Are you kidding me? I couldn't play now. There'll be no way. I would just turn my checks and flip my checks open and write them right back to the NFL because they'll be coming in fine. So, you know, I still enjoy the game. You got to be able to move with times. And, you know, they are protected players a lot more. You know, they pass the ball a lot more, too, meaning I would have a lot more opportunities to get sacks. I mean, you know, look at a game like Kansas City where you got Patrick Mahomes, that quarterback, and he's throwing the ball left and right. Well, when I played, you got Priest Holmes back there and Willie Rolfe and Tony Richardson, and they lined up, Brian Waters, they lined up in power O and ran the ball 30 times. So to get sacks, you know, came a dime a dozen. But, yeah, you know, I'm happy the game, the way the game is. It's fun. It's exciting to see these teams score some points.
Sean, everybody's talking about the San Diego Chargers, excuse me, San Diego Chargers, Los Angeles Chargers, and that game last night. What did the Chiefs show you? Because there were the favorites pretty much in the AFC going into that game. Does it change that now with the Chargers beating them? Can the Chiefs make a deep playoff run?
Yeah, it doesn't change anything because the Chiefs are still a great team. I think that the Chargers just outplayed them last night. That's what it really came down to. They made plays towards the end of the game when they had to and the Chiefs didn't. And that's what happens on Sundays. It doesn't matter who the favorites are or you know, what the books say. At the end of the game, the Chargers needed to make big plays. Phillip needed to make big plays, and they did that.
Sean Merriman is with us. I covered a lot of those Charger teams when Sean was playing linebacker. It's great catching up with you, and I'm glad to hear you're doing well, and you got your radio thing. And tell us a little bit about the LightsOutBrown.com and kind of the other things you're up to these days, Sean.
Yeah, I'm actually on the way to host a event, a Christmas event for the military on Miramar Base. Got a bunch of free Lights Out gear that we're giving out. Also, you can go on LightsOutBrand.com. And if you're not going online, you can also check us out at Tilly. Also selling at Tilly, so you can catch us there.
Outstanding. And one last thing. I mean, as a guy who played for the Chargers and had that 14-2 season and had a shot maybe that year, didn't work for the Super Bowl, if the Chargers were to win a Super Bowl, would you be 1,000% happy for them, or would there be just a little piece of you that felt a little jealous that you weren't a part of it?
No, I mean, look, you always want a ring, right? Because it doesn't matter at the end of the day, the accolades and stuff you get, especially when you're around other guys who pull out those nice, shiny Super Bowl rings, you're going to go work with them. But at the end of the day, you still have to feel happy for them, because I played with Phillip, you know, I played with Antonio Gates, and I played with the organization. So even though we didn't have an opportunity to win a Super Bowl back when I played, if they have an opportunity to win now, and I'm going to be just as happy, man, because I think that Phillip deserves it. You know, he needs to be mentioned in, you know, the quarterback history and one of the best quarterbacks in history, and I think a Super Bowl would do that for him.
Sean, I couldn't have said that any better. Outstanding. Nice catching up with you, sir. Good luck, and let's stay in touch.
You got it. Thank you.
Thanks, Sean. Welcome back to Gwynn and Chris. Tony Gwynn Jr., Chris Ello. Tough night for my Lakers last night. They go down to the Houston Rockets. We are fortunate enough to be joined by Chris McGee, Spectrum Sports LA. Chris, how you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. Good to always talk to you.
Always good to have you on. Yesterday, Lakers go in playing some pretty good basketball, and James Harden was at his best there. He gets the line 20 times, puts together a 50-point triple-double. And the Lakers seem like they kind of lost their cool a little bit last night, Chris.
Yeah, they did. It's frustrating. It's really hard. I think, you know, James, myself, Karan, we were frustrated as well and maybe spent, you know, more time than I would have liked talking about the refereeing. I usually like to talk about the game. But it is really difficult when you have former NBA players that just are frustrated as well. It's like you don't give any advantage to a defender. You don't, you know, give an advantage to a guy that plays the right way. Instead, you're just call fouls for no reason because you feel like you should or because it's star player. Whatever it is, it takes away a little bit from the performance of James Harden, who, by the way, is one of the best in the game, and he's an amazing watch, and he's a great scorer. But it was frustrating, and the Lakers finally did lose their cool, and probably the dagger was the 109-106. You know, not even get touched, foul on Josh Hart, and he hits three free throws, yeah. And then goes and hits 2 3-pointers from 28 feet after that, and that's ball game. Because the Lakers did a lot of good things, man. Lakers played well for most of that game.
Yeah, I mean, this is a back-and-forth, nip-and-tuck game with, you know, 4 or 5 minutes to go. You look at the final score, you think, well, it wasn't much of a game. It was a tremendous game. Obviously, you know, I don't mind talking about officiating. I mean, it comes into play for sure in NBA games from time to time, but I would also think that one thing the Lakers can consider, at least, is the fact that they do have LeBron James on their team, and they get the benefit of a lot of calls, and I'm sure there's a lot of games where the other teams feel like, yeah, you know, we didn't get a couple of calls here and there. I like what Luke Walton said after the game. I really do. I think that's what a good NBA coach should say, which is, hey, it didn't have anything to do with that. We lost our cool. It's a good learning moment for us. And let the fans and the media be a little mad at the refs, but the Lakers don't have time for that.
Yeah, and you know what? He's 100% right, too. Like, you got to save that 25K if you're him. Like, there's times where you should get into it. Right? I mean, no, seriously, though, right? Like, there are times where, and he did it earlier in the year, when he knew he would get fined, but he had to come to LeBron's defense because he wasn't getting those calls late in games, those first few games when other teams were and the star players were. But that's not the time for it, right? At the end of the day, Lakers missed 12 free throw shots. They missed, you know, in the first quarter. They held Houston to 35% shooting. They themselves shot 53%. You should be up 8 after 1, but instead you're down 5 because Houston got 10 offensive rebounds and had 15 second chance points. So you know, Luke's going to look at it that way, and I think that's the smart way to look at it, Chris. I think you're right. I mean, that's for us to talk about and the fans. But as players, hey, man, you had a chance to win that game, and you didn't, bottom line.
Chris McGee joins us here on the Gwynn and Chris, Tony Gwynn Jr., Chris Ello. Chris, what's going to be done about the free throw problem? I mean, it's everybody focuses on LeBron.
What could be done, guys? That's the thing. It's like, no, I'm being serious, right? Like,
this is as a whole team, though. It's not just LeBron, by the way.
Well, yeah, no, it's infectious and contagious. And it's, listen, you work on free throw on your own. You work on it in practice. You can put pressure on it. But until you step onto the court with the lights and the crowd and in certain situations, you have to knock them down. That's what guys have to do. And right now, the Lakers aren't doing it at a high enough clip. They're the third worst team in the league at it. And by the way, if they were better, they'd probably have two or three more wins.
You're right.
It's frustrating.
Yeah.
It's frustrating because you're an NBA player. No doubt.
That's hard to believe.
I just don't know the answer.
It's hard to believe when you look at LeBron James even have one night where he goes 2-for-6, and it's been happening. But in general, and I know everybody's a little frustrated with the game last night, I have been more than impressed with the Lakers overall. In fact, Tony and I have talked about this several times. I did not expect to see 17-11. I expected to see maybe 14-14. And then maybe about the 50-game mark, you know, it starts to kick in a little bit and LeBron and everybody starts to mesh and team takes off a little bit, gets 7, 8, 9 games over 500, makes a nice playoff push. But I've been pretty impressed with what they've done so far overall. Let's leave last night's game out for a second. Have you been impressed with what they've been able to accomplish to this point?
Chris, let me say this. This is why you get paid to do your job. You actually know what you're talking about. You're 100% right. We should be pleased. I mean, I'm elated. And you know what last night's about? Like, Laker fans are pissed. I'm bummed. You want to win that game because now there are expectations to win.
Right.
That is a wonderful feeling. When before you're like, hey, by the way, we were in that game on the road in Houston. We should be pretty happy about it. But now you expect to win, and I'm thrilled. They're 17-11. It's funny how I keep going back to a couple games I think they should have won, and I have to remind myself, you know what? They also won some close ones that maybe they could have lost. So I'm really thrilled with how the team has. And to be honest with you guys, the way they've faced adversity early, whether it's outside noise at 2-5, whether it's suspensions, whether it's injuries to key players, they have figured out ways to win, ways to play with each other in crunch time. So yeah, man, 17-11, I have to be honest, it feels really good. It feels really good to have a competitive team again.
Chris, where are the Lakers at right now with Rondo, Ingram, and Beasley's missed some time due to some family issues, huh?
Yeah, man, it's a bummer. I was kind of hoping you'd have them for this road trip. I don't know. We haven't got an official word. I don't want to call it a setback. I just know Rondo had to see the hand specialist. I don't call it a setback because he's between 4 and 5 weeks right now, and that's when he's supposed to come back. So
right.
I'm hoping next week he's back. Ingram, you just don't know. He's reevaluated on Saturday. I guess if things went well, maybe he could join the team Sunday, Tuesday, or maybe you just say, let's just hold off for a few days and we'll have him back for the homestand. So it's been brutal. I don't think the Lakers or the staff get enough credit for how they've played without those guys. And I know that creates other opportunities for people, and you know, you're seeing Kuz emerge, and I think that's awesome. But when you're without Rondo and you're without B.I., you lose two major ball handlers on that team, two guys that can organize you. You miss Ingram's length defensively, so it definitely affects your team. And the fact that they've still won a lot of games is even more impressive in my eyes.
Chris McGee, Spectrum Sports, covering the Lakers and talking some NBA hoops with us here on 97.3 The Fan. Chris, there was some talk earlier this week. In fact, it seemed fairly serious talk that the Lakers were eyeing Trevor Ariza. Don't know all of the trade possibilities and rumors and whether maybe it was just a smokescreen. But again, I mean, Tony and I talk a lot of Lakers. He makes me do that. But I think Trevor Ariza would be a really nice fit for this team. I mean, I every team needs a dirty work guy, and I think the Lakers are kind of working on finding that, but Trevor Ariza seems like they'd give them a nice boost. Is that something that the organization is serious about, or is that just somebody throwing a name out there?
Well, I think that's a good question, because a lot of times people will just drop names out there, and it's from the agent, like John Wall, for instance. Oh, the Lakers were offering Lonzo Ball for John Wall. No, they weren't. John Wall, the Knicks wanted John Wall. No, actually, they don't. Nobody wants that contract, but that's John Wall's people putting that out there, right? This is a little bit different because the salaries match when you're talking about a KCP and maybe a second rounder and getting a third team involved and maybe filling a need for the Lakers. So I definitely think where there's smoke, there's a little fire. I don't know from the Laker end. I haven't talked to anyone there where they said, hey, this is a real thing. I don't know if it's going to happen, but I definitely think that there have been talks about it. And, you know, the thing is, nothing can happen until December 15th, which is what, tomorrow?
Yep.
Yeah, because both guys are free agents. So you can't even trade a free agent until December 15th. So if it's going to go down, it would go down after tomorrow. I don't know. I don't know how much sense it makes for certain teams. The way I look at it is three teams maybe have to be involved, right? I would think Phoenix would want to keep their cap space, so they don't want anyone long term, but maybe they want a young guard. You know, KCP can fill a need for a couple of teams, but KCP would also have to sign off on this because he's got a trade kicker in his contract. So you got to remember that. So there's a lot of things that have to happen for deals to go down. Deals could get really close and never happen. Teams can talk and nothing can ever happen. So it has to really fit for it to work. But in your question about Trevor Ariza, yeah, man, listen, he's a champion. He's a guy that's been there before. And for me, I think the reason why I love Trevor Ariza on this team is because when this team does get to the playoffs, they're going to have a lot of young guys playing key minutes that have never been there. And if you've never been there in the NBA, it's not that easy to win and manage. So having another body that understands that process would definitely help.
Chris McGee, Spectrum LA Sports, covers the Lakers, talking a little bit of Laker basketball right now. Chris, before we let you go, I got to ask you one more question. I watch you guys on TV all the time. I know how big of a Brandon Ingram fan as you are, as am I. It's really been Kyle Kuzma who stepped into the young next man up role. He's done it more consistently this year. Tell us a little bit about Kyle Kuzma and the year he's having.
Yeah, Kuz has been awesome. I think definitely those are the top three guys. I think a huge topic, at least probably for you guys and for us always, is who emerges as that number two. I've always thought Ingram was the more natural number two scorer.
Yeah.
Ingram's got to work so hard for his buckets, even though he averages 15, 16 a game. But I like Kuz emerging as the number two because he's taking advantage of while Ingram and Rondo have been out, and he's making the most of his minutes, but he's doing it on both ends. He's averaging, what, 5 assists in this time? He's getting 7 to 8 rebounds. He's playing better defense. Like, that's what I love about Kuz. I love that Kuz sees everything as an opportunity and rises to the challenge. That's what I think a true number two does. So I'm elated with the way he played, man. It's been huge. And people always want me to choose, and I don't mean you guys, but fans, I think you either have to have Ingram or you have to have Kuz.
No, not at all.
Trust me, guys, there's nothing wrong with having both.
Doesn't hurt to have a third guy.
Ingram
just
turned 21.
Ask all those teams that have won championships, man. There's more than one, and there's more than two usually.
Yeah.
There's usually
the reason
a
why you guys get paid to be on the radio. You know things.
We know stuff. Either that or we make it up and it sounds good. Hey, Chris, thanks for the time.
That's all that matters.
Enjoy the holiday season and keep it rolling with the Lake Show, and we'll catch up to you soon. Thanks so much.
Thanks,
we always
Peter.
Love having you on.
Hey, love talking to you guys, Chris and Tony. Let me know if you need me around the holiday time or just after. We'll connect for sure.
Sounds good.
Joining us for his regular Friday night visit, brought to you by Lolita's. Lolita's Mexican food, serving San Diego's best Mexican since 1984. Coach, it almost seems that long ago since the Chargers won a game like that.
It sure does. Hey, good for the Chargers last night. The biggest win in L.A. Charger history. Congratulations.
That's what I said going into the game. It was their biggest game in L.A. Charger history since 1960. So
when Paul Lowe was returning kicks.
Yeah, way back in the day. Well, Coach, the high school football season continues on, and we have another championship game or two or three tomorrow, yeah?
Yeah, we got one tonight. We got that big matchup in Los Angeles tonight, 8:00, you got that Folsom team that has just been absolutely rolling. They scored, what, 82 points last week in their win. They're going against Cathedral Catholic.
They scored what? Did you say 82 points, Coach?
Yeah, they scored 82 points. They kind of ran the score up. It was 82 to 40-something. Well, you know, this team has a history of doing that. They don't know the word sportsmanship, I guess, in that part of the state. But nonetheless, they're going to be playing Cathedral tonight. And, you know, I told somebody this week, and, you know, Folsom, they may run over Cathedral tonight. I don't know. But, you know, one thing they're going to have to do is they're going to have to stop the run, because with that big offensive line that Cathedral has and Sean Palma running behind that line, they can take the ball and go on long drives and work that clock. So it's hard to score 82 points if you don't have the football. So I'm sure that's going to be Sean Doyle's game plan tonight, try to you know, play a little keep away from Folsom's offense tonight.
I would think so. I mean, everything I've seen from Cathedral, I wouldn't be adverse to, you know, thinking they can win a ball game. I mean,
You know what? They got some guys on that team that played in that state championship game a couple of years ago, namely Poma. And, you know, Poma's the type of guy, he wants the ball. I mean, if he has to carry it 50 times tonight, he'll carry it 50 times.
Coach, tell us about the other two games that we got going this weekend.
Well, actually, we got three more tomorrow. And all these guys have had to make long trips, which is always kind of interesting. Tomorrow, you've got Lincoln going against Menlo Atherton up at Sequoia High School in Redwood City. They're going to play at 6 o'clock tomorrow night. Lincoln 11-4, Menlo Atherton 12-2. And you know, the one thing about Lincoln, they've got a lot of athleticism, and their defense really, really was playing well offensively. You know, they can throw it a little bit, they'll run it, but defensively, I think they can really maybe have a difference maker. I'm not sure Menlo Atherton has seen the athleticism of the Lincoln Hornets so far this year. In a Division V game, you got San Diego High up at Colfax High School. Colfax 13-0, San Diego High 11-2. Colfax, from what I understand, is a really good team. San Diego High is going to be in for a tough one tomorrow night, but they've got their athletes as well, and they've had a great year. And then in the other game, and these guys had to bus about 800 miles, I believe, Orange Glen, they left yesterday. They're 10-3. They're going to play Lincoln High out of San Francisco, who's 12-0, and they're playing at the City College of San Francisco tomorrow. You know, that's I've talked to people actually today, and there's some people that actually think Orange Glen could win that game tomorrow. They don't think that Lincoln has seen the type of team that Orange Glen has, and they think they might match up well. But, you know, in these games, you just never really know. You just don't know how guys are going to perform.
Coach, the San Diego teams in general in these high school bowl games, I mean, it's been going on for a decade or so now. Have San Diego teams closed the gap on what L.A. area teams? Have they been more successful in these bowl games as time has gone on?
Oh, I think so. I mean, you go back and you look at, you know, what Cathedral's done. They won a couple of state titles. Oceanside's had their run. I think overall it's gone pretty well, Chris. I think the one thing that we're probably not going to have anytime soon is one of those open division teams like a Mater Dei or a St. John Bosco. I mean, those are powerhouse teams. And, you know, people down here talk about Link or about Cathedral Catholic getting a lot of guys to transfer in because it's a private school and that. And they do a great job. But up there in L.A., you got guys transferring all over the place. And, I mean, you've got these, like, super high school teams. I mean, St. John Bosco and Mater Dei, you're talking about one of the top two, three, four teams in the country year in and year out right now.
Coach Kandare, how far are these San Diego teams from competing in that open division from a state standpoint?
Well, I don't know. I think it's going to be a while. I don't think that teams down here, you know, go out and openly recruit. I don't know if they openly recruit up there. I think anytime you have a good program, you know, guys and their parents are going to want to come to your program. Yeah. I mean, I just look down here in San Diego. You look at a lot of the top-notch programs. You look at Cathedral. You look at Torrey Pines. You look at La Costa Canyon. And I'm not talking about just football. I'm talking about other male sports and female sports as well. I mean, you want to give your kids the best opportunity. But I will also tell you this. I think sometimes when you go to a program like that and you're really talented and you're going in with a lot of other talented players, you may not be showcased as well if you'd have stayed at the school that you were originally at, to be honest with you.
All right. Yeah, you can get into behind a bunch of people. Coach John Kandare with us, our regular Friday night high school visit. Coach, you got some Lolita's Players of the Week for us?
Oh, I certainly do. And I got to tell you guys, I'm at a little get-together up here in Encinitas. I just stepped out. I was sitting next to Buddy Black. A.J. Preller's here tonight. And we're going to talk a little baseball here when I get off the phone with you guys. You guys just got back from the winter meetings. And by the way, a very nice interview with Geeter Big Chris McGee. I really enjoyed that on my way up here to this get-together. Okay, our student athletes for the week. Our first lady from Mount Miguel High School, Selena Peterson. Last year, she was an all-section basketball player. She's only a sophomore. Last week, she had ball games of 43 points against Del Norte. She had 28 more against Modern Day Catholic to lead her team to the championship of the Matador Classic. So, Selena Peterson, remember that name because she's got two more years after this, and she's already been all CIF. And on the boys' side, a young basketball player from down at San Ysidro, Kalen Raines. This is interesting. I always like this. And Tony, you can relate to this. Chris, you maybe have seen this kid. He had a season low against Chula Vista 14, but then he came back the next game and banged home 31 in an 88-31 victory over Mar Vista. Right now, San Ysidro getting off to a 5-1 start. They're averaging 90 a game. And Kalen Raines doing a great job down there at San Ysidro. So congratulations to Kalen Raines of San Ysidro, boys basketball player, and Selena Peterson, lady basketball player from the Mount Miguel Matadors.
Both of them able to win those awards because Chris Ella did not have to referee any of their games. I probably would have fouled both kids out by accident. So,
yeah, you'd have fouled them out in the second quarter.
No, I'd never do that, Coach. I always keep an eye on those star players.
I know that.
Coach, well, tell Buddy Black hi for us.
Me the same.
I will.
And AJ as well, and congratulate them on Ian Kinsler. And or the Padres on Ian Kinsler, I guess. The Rockies probably not going to congratulate them on Ian Kinsler. But have a good time tonight, and thanks for checking in, and we'll catch up to you next week.
All right, gentlemen, happy holidays to everyone out there. Hope everyone's getting their Christmas shopping done.
All right, Coach, take care, brother.
All right, bye.
There he goes, the coach, John Quintero, with his regular high school Friday night feature and our Athletes of the Week. Thanks to Lolita's Mexican Restaurant, serving Mexican food, the best in San Diego. Gets me hungry every time I talk about it. 1984, all the way down.
What did Rocky say?
It's now time for the most electrifying segment of sports radio.
Competitors don't make excuses, they just make plays.
There you go. Best of the rest. There's your motivation.
In the Big Five.
Well, what Chris just talked about is big enough to go number one. So we'll wait to number one for that, but let's get started.
Number five.
All right, former Oakland Athletics catcher Bruce Maxwell has fired his agent as he remains unemployed, but one Major League Baseball executive reportedly believes a change in agent won't get him a job. And the reason you might not know who Bruce Maxwell is because he's not very good, but you may know him because he was the only baseball player to kneel during the national anthem of a Major League Baseball game. He also has legal problems after he was arrested for pointing a gun at a delivery driver, but that's not what is keeping him out. And the anonymous executive said, quote, "It's the kneeling thing that might keep him from getting another job, not the arrest. Owners aren't going to want to deal with that whole anthem issue," according to San Francisco Chronicle's Susan Slusser. So Maxwell, he was the only guy to take a knee during the national anthem. But Chris, do you think Bruce Maxwell's protest is the reason he doesn't have a job right now?
Sounds like the fact that he's not a very good player is making it a very convenient excuse for everybody to say why he doesn't have a job in the big leagues. I mean, you do have to perform at some point, whether you kneel or don't. I do believe that baseball would love very much to stay out of that controversy, and so far baseball has done a good job of staying out of that controversy. You know, Tony and I, when we're sitting there before ball games doing the show, or when I was doing the pregame show this year, I noticed every night, Tony, during the national anthem, there's a different number of players that come out for the anthem. It's not every player. Sometimes it's 10 guys. Sometimes it's 20 guys. Some guys go into clubhouse. Baseball seems to have very relaxed rules on this. So I think that, you know, right now baseball's okay. So if they can keep this guy playing badly, then they can keep him off a roster.
Tony, I really enjoyed your kneeling rendition during.
Yes, that's what he
during the
doing
question.
Because
you knew
who,
yeah,
I knew who he was.
Exactly.
I didn't know who he was at all.
What do you think, Tony?
I'm sure it's a combination of both things. He hasn't played very well. You look at his minor league numbers; nothing is just blowing you away. And you add the legal troubles to it. You add that, especially in a sport like baseball. Ownership is going to want to stay as far away from the anthem thing as possible. I think it's a combination of all things. Now, it very well could be the kneeling thing, but it certainly doesn't help that he's been arrested and he hasn't played particularly well lately.
If it is the kneeling thing, there's certainly nobody's going to come out and say that.
Yeah, they're not.
They're just going to hope that we all kind of forget about it and then he goes away. That's the way baseball's dealt with this so far, 100%. And it's worked.
I have a question for you guys. Just popped in my head. Why do you think anonymous executives make these claims? Is it to put it out there? Why would he say that? Why would an anonymous executive say this about the guy?
I think in this case, it's because of the subject matter. I mean, but you know, and not just because they talking on. That's just the way we get down nowadays. It's anonymous everything, and it's coming from people inside of baseball. So you don't want to be, you know, putting things out there that an owner that you may work for may look at you and be like, that's not why he's not signed with us. And you have to answer to those type of questions. Whoever this anonymous source is, I would guess, still wants a job in baseball. So he's protecting himself.
Number four.
We talked last week about the NFL suspending field umpire Roy Ellison for accusations that he made inappropriate comments to Bills defensive end Jerry Hughes in a game a few weeks ago. Then Hughes confronted Ellison in the tunnel after the game, yelling at him. Well, NFL Network's Tom Pelissero reports field umpire Roy Ellison has been reinstated and will be fined one game check, which is $9,300. On the other hand, Jerry Hughes was fined $53,482 for coming after Ellison after the game. So, Tony, do you think these fine amounts are fair?
Yeah, it's proportionate. I mean, I'm almost certain that the referee isn't making nowhere near with.
Let me go into a little bit deeper.
Go ahead.
It's one game check for the referee, but it's only 1/6 of a game check for Jerry Hughes.
Yeah, I think it's proportionate. Honestly, I mean, it sucks if you're Hughes and you're giving up that kind of money based on. But I'm sure that $9,800. Hurts that referee a little bit more than the, what was it,
53,482.
And don't forget that 82 at the end.
I'm surprised they don't put change on it, too.
I'm surprised, too. I'm so surprised.
Chris, what do you think?
I 100% agree with Tony. Okay. I think it's very proportionate. The referee ought to be ashamed of himself.
He should.
To be in a situation where he's even had to be fined and had to be suspended. Officials... We're already having a tough enough year in the NFL as it is.
It's
the last thing that we need is a guy mouthing off at players. Do your job, officials, and stay out of the way. Nobody, as an official, I know this, nobody goes to games or watches games to watch officials officiate. So stay out of the way.
That is true, and I feel like this needs to be said. As I was always taught to have the utmost respect for officials, umpires, and so therefore they are always going to be held at a higher standard than the players are. The players do it all the time. They are not the players. The officials are supposed to be held to a higher standard. Just like our teachers, our government officials, they're all supposed to be held to a higher standard than the regular folk.
You know what makes me laugh when you say that, and I agree with you again, but I think to myself, what if I acted while I was refereeing a high school basketball game same way as that coach did over there on the sideline? And I was running up and, that's traveling! And I was waving my arms all over the place and
that's
blowing
a good point.
Tweet, 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 tweet. I mean, it would be crazy.
I left out coaches. Coaches are supposed to be held to a higher standard, too.
Yes, it would be crazy if I was acting just like the coach who's yelling at me. So, officials, shut up and stay out of the way.
Number three.
I like that. Shut up and stay out of the way. We have made a lot of what the Bulls are doing this year. They fired Fred Hoiberg, then interim coach Jim Boylan almost had his team mutiny on him. And now Jabari Parker seems to be out because he is not part of the regular rotation anymore. Parker signed a 2-year, $40 million deal with the Bulls over the summer. He was the team's sixth man to begin the season. And Jabari Parker said, quote, it is a surprise because I did everything I could in the time that I was given, but it is what it is. You can't pout. You just got to keep moving, end quote. So, Chris, being our Bulls fan, you're up first. Will Jim Boylan be fired before the year is over?
No, they're going to get rid of John Paxson and Gar Forman, the two idiots who signed Jabari Parker to a $40 million deal during the offseason. He's only 23 years old, so maybe he's got some upside, but it was a ridiculously stupid signing in the first place, and the Bulls are finding that out now, that the guy isn't worth that much, and that's why he can't make the rotation. I mean, if he was getting the job done, believe me, the Bulls with six wins would have him in the lineup playing, but he's not getting the job done. He's not worth that kind of money.
Six wins, man.
The Bulls need to make a change at the tip top. Jim Boylan may get fired as part of all of that.
Has an interim coach ever been fired?
Interim coaches?
Like, I'm asking that. In season, interim coaches getting fired?
I would think there's some interim coaches that haven't survived.
Yeah.
But
I was about to say, by very definition.
They all get fired.
No, I meant like in season after they became the interim.
Yeah. The Bulls' problems go deeper than the coach and the players. That's the bottom line there.
Tony?
I agree with Chris. This is an issue that is deep-rooted. That's in their front office. They got to figure out the leadership up top before they could start worrying about rotations, because the rotation is just a byproduct of who the people up top sign. So you got to fix that part first before any of this other stuff gets better.
Number two.
It's looking more and more like the Ravens are going to be sticking with Lamar Jackson as quarterback, and some NFL experts are saying that that Joe Flacco will be trade bait in the offseason. So, Tony, you're up
Jacksonville.
First. If you are an NFL GM in need of a quarterback, would you trade for Joe Flacco? He has 3 years and $63 million left on his Super Bowl contract, but there is an option for an out in 2020. But would you trade for him?
Yeah, because listen, we all know about NFL contracts. It doesn't matter how much total money is on there. They know they can cut that up immediately after the year's over. I just named a team, Jacksonville. They're in desperate need of a quarterback. And this team a year ago was one game away from getting to the Super Bowl. So I think there are teams out there. I think there are teams that will want to go after Flacco because of how you can manipulate the NFL. And yes, he will be traded.
His salary, his signing bonus through 2020, he's got $24 million guaranteed owed of that 63. So
what's Kirk Cousins getting right now?
84. 80,
that's you get a couple years out
get
of
all
it.
Fully guaranteed.
There you go.
Chris, what do you think?
I think Joe Flacco is still pretty good quarterback.
Yeah.
I really do. I mean, I'm looking at his statistics for this year alone. They're very similar to his career statistics. I mean, it's just that we remember him going on a playoff and riding a good streak to a Super Bowl championship. But Flacco's always been a little better than mediocre quarterback. But look, there's a lot of teams that have far worse than mediocre quarterbacks on, and Jacksonville's not the only one, Tony. I think we can probably think of several other teams, but that was the first one that came to mind. But there's several other teams. So Tony's right. You can sign Joe Flacco. I don't care what his contract is. If he doesn't work out, you cut him, and you don't have to give him any money.
Yep.
So there's no risk involved.
Football hasn't made when it comes to that kind of stuff.
Yeah, if you had to give him $60 million over the next 3 years, then I don't think anybody would sign Joe Flacco. But I think there's a good chance that he will continue on somewhere else if Baltimore doesn't keep him. And I don't rule that out, because I told you already, I think he's going to come back this season, because I don't think Lamar Jackson's going to take them all the way to the playoffs.
Well, you know what? I kind of hope you're what is that? That Nostradamus thing of yours right there happens, because that would means I get that upset victory that I've predicted. So I'm gonna need.
Oh, you're hoping to see
this
week.
Lamar, exactly.
You're hoping to see Lamar Jackson be crappy this week, so Tampa Bay can beat Baltimore.
Sure, yeah.
And then you get back in our pick'em game.
If Joe Flacco didn't win that stupid Super Bowl, Jim Harbaugh
against the 49ers.
Would still be the coach of the 49ers.
Number one.
All right, Chris.
You guys tried
it
to cheat. You turned all the lights off and everything. So
it helped.
It did.
It brought us back.
You almost cheated and won.
Chris teased it. The Padres might be in on a big-name Major League Baseball pitcher. That pitcher is Houston Astros' Dallas Keuchel. Dennis Lynn of The Athletic tweeted today, quote, "The Padres have interest in Dallas Keuchel, according to sources, though the asking price is currently prohibitive, likely for most teams. Keuchel, a Scott Boras client and the top free agent starter left, isn't expected to sign until late in the offseason." So, Chris, is Dallas Keuchel worth the money?
Dallas Keuchel for Luis Urias. Now the Ian Kinsler signing makes some sense to me. Look, I think Dallas Keuchel is a pretty good pitcher. He's an all-star a couple of years ago. He's a Cy Young Award winner 4 years ago. So you got to go back a little bit, but you know, last year still 12-11 wasn't a huge part of that Houston staff last year, though. I mean, they had other guys that stepped up and had bigger years than he did. I think he's a difference maker, and I think the Padres need a difference maker in that rotation somewhere. Dallas Keuchel is a guy that I think I would take a fairly close look at.
Tony,
if this was a trade, I would be 100% in on this. Since it's a free agent signing, I'm not 100% in on
not
this.
Not with the agent?
I'm not even concerned about Scott Boras because I believe Hosmer's a Scott Boras guy.
Is.
So that doesn't bother me. It's just that you've already gone out and gave your plan a boost of turbocharge when you went out and signed Hosmer. I don't know that you can do that signing again right now. The timing of it isn't right. The Padres, I think next year, if everything goes right with the young guys, everybody takes the steps necessary, next year they'll be ready to take that kind of jump. Not this year, though.
That's all.
Let's take
for
it
the
in.
Big Five from Gwynn and Chris.
Let's take it in.
97.3, The Fan.
Thomas, go ahead and give that man a round of applause. He
yes!
actually got through. He just mic dropped us and walked out the room. Clean Big Five.
No, wait a second. You were walking out the
room. Oh, and then he came back. He didn't even finish it. He didn't even finish his celebration right.
Yeah. We really now stay out there. That's good.
Tony, hit the lock.
Perfect. Lock the door. He's out. Now the show can go on. No, good work there,
Clean
Scraby.
Big Five for Scraby.
Yeah, he did it.
It's a rarity.
He rose to the occasion. We're very proud of him. Nice job. All right. We have hit plenty on the Chargers-Chiefs game. We're going to get back to that. Some more phone calls invited at 833-288-0973. Your thoughts on the Padres signing Ian Kinsler today? I don't like it. Tony's trying to figure out a way to like it. How about you out there? Well, I don't know. I'm putting words in your mouth.